I don't know, what am I saying? Welcome to Business Jazz? Surely not.
Yeah. This is Business Jazz Insert. This is actually on at the moment, is it?
It is. Oh. This is the clumsiest start to an episode we've ever had.
Well, no, I'll have a go at doing a proper start now.
Welcome to Business Jazz with Paul O'Mahony, Jane Boyd and Roger Overall. The podcast about how to be genuinely attractive in business today.
Welcome to Business Jazz, coming to you from an unusual location as we walk down one of the best streets in the whole of Cork City in Ireland. It's called Princes Street, and we're doing a one-off episode of Business Jazz to coincide with the Jazz Festival in Cork, which is one of the most widely respected jazz festivals in the world.
I don't know anything about Princes Street, by the way.
Oh, Princes Street is where Nash 19 is, but before we lose our audience by talking about what exactly is here, I'd like to introduce you to Roger Overall, who's the sound director of Business Jazz and who's holding the equipment now. He's a man who's got so many talents, he's completely mixed up. He started life as a journalist, then he became a photographer, and now he's a storyteller, and he's doing a whole load of different things, but he has a great jazz mind, haven't you, Roger?
You say so, Paul. I don't know what a great jazz mind is. I know nothing about jazz and I can't play an instrument. I'm walking along with Paul O'Mahony. I know he was a bus conductor and I know he was a consultant and I know he worked for English Heritage. And I know that he now is partner in a company called Change Agents, possibly one of the greatest names ever, because it will give you an absolute idea of what the company does. It's a branding company and it will...
Hang on, you're sounding like spam. Let's come back to the point. We're after jazz music, right? And the whole idea of this episode of Business Jazz is that we're going to just rift around and anything that comes into our head. And we've just had two failures, haven't we, Roger?
We have. We just walked into two bars and there was no jazz playing whatsoever. On top of which, I think the age gap between the average age of the people in there and you and I was at least 20 to 30 years.
Well, I wouldn't have minded the age gap if, in fact, we'd got any music. But so far, we're now in search of this. So this whole episode of Business Jazz is in search of music.
It is. We've just walked past a clothing shop called Savile and they had some music playing, but we're looking for live musicians, live people. Can we just point out, Paul, before people get overexcited, because we do have a legacy audience for the Business Jazz podcast, who may now be thinking, wait a moment, they're back.
Yeah, which cemetery are they in, by the way, if they're a sort of legacy audience? But I tell you, it's a one-off episode. Depending on its success, we may never do another one again. You know, who knows?
Let's not make any promises. So we're in search of music. But I'm sure we'll be talking about business, surely. It's just a rare occasion where we actually have some jazz that we can find, some real jazz.
Well, we began a life in business jazz, rifting off some ideas that Chris Brogan continues to share in his weekly newsletter. But one of the things I know about Chris Brogan is he's actually a musician, by the way. He plays in a band. I also know that his girlfriend is a trained singer. Oh, hang on. We got a bit of music here. The whole underlying principle of... Business Jazz is that we're here to help people to be able to be more attractive in business today.
Correct.
And I certainly think that one of the ways of attracting people to your business is music.
I think that's a good point. We're walking down with Winthrop Street and we're walking past the man who is playing an electric violin, a strange looking contraption that is... It's the bare basic outline of a violin. You have to look at it to realise what it is.
Have you ever used music in your business, Roger? I mean, you're a filmmaker, you're an audio person, you're a journalist. What use have you ever made of music in your business life?
A very good question and very, very timely. First of all, yes, I've used it in video presentations. So any video I shoot typically will have music. But more recently, I mean, only a couple of days ago, my business partner, Ronan Kirby, and I were discussing with some musicians about a theme tune for our business that we can use in a podcast. One is that we can use it as a little couple of notes at the end of anything we produce. And they got it beautifully. This is, I find, quite interesting, considering you're a branding person. They're designing the music based on our logo.
I hope they actually know what the logo stands for then.
They got it in one, much like you did. When I showed it to you, you had a fairly good idea. Now, it's been slightly refined since you saw it, but you got a number of things that were intentionally put in there by me. And the musicians, if you like, they've read the logo, and they came back to us with a description of the music that we could not possibly have done better ourselves if we'd sat down with them for a day to explain. They came back with such an intuitive understanding of what we wanted the music to be.
So this is a deliberate, intentional use of music in order to provide a foundation which will, I think, whip up some associations with people who come across your business.
Yes. The music will be the story of the service that we provide.
There's nothing up that way. I think we should walk down the street in this way, yeah? Okay. So the music's going to be the story of the service you provide. So what is it? Is it going to be the melody which is going to carry it? Is it going to be the tone, or is it going to be the rhythm, or what is it that's going to... Is it going to be the instruments you use? You know, I guess if you do it on drums, it'll be different from doing it on an oboe?
It'll be the melody and the rhythm. We've given them free rein. Now that we know that they know what we want, we're giving them utter free rein to further interpret that. But my feeling will be it will be the rhythm and the beat, simply because our business is all around helping people properly structure their stories and speak with one coherent voice, whereas a lot of businesses may not be sure what their story is, may be telling different stories. So we're going to start off with a lot of disconsonant notes that don't seem to hang together, which will then eventually morph into a melody, a harmonious, lined up melody that shows you A, what we do, and also B, the journey we take you on. We take you from maybe a confused story being told not very harmoniously to a story that hangs together and is also, because it hangs together, is received by an audience more readily.
And I happen to know that you're aiming to specialize in a particular sector of the business world. So it isn't just anyone and everyone. So in what way are you directing your composer to take that into account?
The industry is the IT industry. So when we had the conversation, Ronan and myself, one of the things that we raised was that it is a technology industry. And now, while we don't want the music to be this music form called techno, so we have given some direction in terms of, look, it's a digital IT-related business. It's something that your business partner, Jonathan, mentioned. Let the creatives do their thing without
shackling
them too
much. Oh, yeah, absolutely. God, if you try to tell creatives what to do, you're just wasting your bloody time. Absolutely, you know? I mean, once they have a sense and you're convinced that they've got the message of what the heart of your brand really is, then the last thing you want to do is to tell them how to apply their creativity to that. Absolutely.
And what about your own business then, Paul? Are you looking at music? Because you're a very audio-focused person.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to be able to tell you that, you know, we've been swamped with offers from composers who want to compose a symphony to go with our business. But no, what I'm intrigued by at the moment, Roger, is the idea that, you know, we click on websites, and you know more about this technical stuff than I do. You click on a website, right? And I don't know of any website that immediately you click on it, it plays you music. So what I would actually like is that when people click on our website, right, that they always get a piece of music, which would be ours, would be absolutely composed specially for us, so we would own it, just as we own the colours, we own the shape, we own the words, we own the tone of the words, we own the design. So why on earth shouldn't we own the sound? Now, we have loads of audio on our website, which will be revealed shortly, but we don't have at present any music. We have loads of photographs. We've even got some of your photographs up there. In fact, a good number of them. But we haven't got any music yet. So come on, tell me, whose website, once you click on it, gives you music which immediately confirms to you that you've landed in the right place?
You will see it. Now, the secondary part to your question there, I'm not sure about. But the first part is most definitely, if you go to quite a lot of wedding photographers and wedding-related websites, we'll have music play straight away. Typically, if it's a photographer, it will coincide with a slideshow.
Here comes the bride.
Well, that's
a bell or something like that.
Well, that's then a very good question, because it's usually classical music. But does that immediately confirm that you've arrived at a wedding photographer's website? I don't know. Now, just as a follow-on from that, people are backing away from this now, because if you are looking at a website at work, your boss or your employer may not want you looking at a website. And of course, a dead giveaway if you're in Cubicleville or Cubesville or whatever they're called, is that suddenly this music rings out throughout the office when you've landed on a website and you're trying to sneakily plan your wedding.
But look, these days anyway, the vast majority of people are planning their wedding on tablets and smartphones, are they not?
I have no idea.
Well, all the evidence that we know is that the sales of smartphones and tablets are vastly outstripping the sales of laptops and desktops. And I imagine a sensible person can cut off the sound on their PC in order that they can steal time from their employer by planning their wedding.
Which is what a lot of people are doing, and therefore undermines the use of music on a website. It's an interesting phenomenon that has been playing out in the wedding space. Who knows how it would work in the branding space?
All these wedding photographers now, my guess is that they're just simply finding a piece of music which conjures up a bride walking down the aisle, and they're likely to pick some of the most popular pieces. And that, I think, is a complete, utter stupidity, because it doesn't provide any differentiation. I imagine they're all picking out of the same trough. And frankly, the only reason that I can see to use a piece of music is, first of all, that you own it. It is absolutely yours, and nobody, it belongs to nobody else, and therefore over a period of time it's your signature tune.
I totally agree. We'll just walk past, and those of you with acute ears will probably recognise the fact that we're walking past the same electronic violinist. So we have done a mini circle.
We still haven't found a
go down
this end. Augmented seventh or anything, you know.
But you're right. I don't think this is peculiar to wedding photographers. I think this is something that a lot of businesses do. They follow the herd. They follow. There's a flock element where, I like that idea. I've seen that somewhere else, and I'm going to apply pretty much the same idea to my own business, rather than to say, well, do you know what? I should have my logo reflect my brand values, my core values for the business. I should have my music reflect who I am, and therefore have that. At the very least, I can stand up against Paul O'Mahony and argue why I have that piece of music, that I can say it's for this reason.
Well, I mean, for example, any company, Vodafone or Ford or any big, serious company that has really invested in its brand, it has absolute obsession with its brand colours, right? It absolutely wouldn't allow anybody to print, and I've seen companies shred masses of stuff on the grounds that the thing was colour tone wrong.
Yes.
And I've seen all sorts of people try to argue, it'll be all right. But the guardians of the brand know darn well that Coca-Cola Red is Coca-Cola Red. And as soon as anybody sees a little flash of Coca-Cola Red out of the side of their eye, they immediately get the association with Coca-Cola, just like you would the shape of the way in which Coca-Cola is drawn.
Mm.
So consequently, I mean, you have a situation now in which if people go around copying each other, I mean, that's shallow, shallow, shallow. The point is you need, in terms of music and in terms of colour and in terms of typeface and in terms of, you know, every little element, what you're trying to do is set up memory, association, and particularly the minute you see it, you say you get the kind of feelings that the company wants you to have.
Hello. Two of my clients walking past there, they actually run a design agency, and they were one of the very first people to give me work when I moved to Cork 10 years ago on the 31st of October.
My God, and you're still saying hello to them?
Mm.
That's a good sign now, Roger. Anyway, we've obviously exhausted music, have we? Because we've actually not found a single sound here in Cork of jazz music. There was a pub back there, by the way. Can we just turn around and go back there for a second?
While
we look in the window.
Where are we going? Oh, we have stopped outside a music shop.
If we can't play any jazz music, we can at least look on here and see that here I have in front of me Ibanez guitar. And it's got here a little plastic thing stuck in it saying jazz swing. And for 22 euros and something, I don't know what you get for that price. But anyway, and here we have two saxophones.
I think they are guitar strings.
Oh, really?
It's written on it, flat wound.
What does that mean, flat wound?
I don't know, but to me that is something that you do to strings and cables. What else have we got? I think these people have thought about their display, because there's a book over here with Duke Ellington, a photograph of Duke Ellington.
Leader of the most long-lived and probably the most revered big band in jazz, pictured in his dressing room. Composer of such timeless classics as Mood Indigo, Satin Doll and Solitude, Duke's harmonic concept was way ahead of his time. His piano style was also highly original, consisting of dark chords, I guess they were played with the black keys, dark chords, cascading arpeggios, wonderful, and percussive effects, often prefiguring later modernists such as, I nearly call him Thessalonius, but he isn't, he's Thelonious Monk.
You are a font of knowledge, you're a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah, I can read, you know. We got a wonderful saxophone. I'm a great lover of saxophones. And then this shop is called Opus
2.
2 Music Shop. Let's go back to that pub.
Now, the Cork Jazz Festival is actually quite a big do, quite a big affair. It's quite important.
My sister's husband's father used to travel down from Belfast every single year for, I don't know, 20 plus years to come to the Cork Jazz Festival. He came out of East Belfast and he came down here with a gang of his mates, about 5 or 6 of them. Oh. And they played here. They played the Jazz Festival. Yeah. You know that piece of music, In Search of a Lost Chord? Well, we're actually in search of a lost riff.
Yeah.
So the main points we've covered in this podcast, really, and it probably is the only point we feel like covering because we've got to get back to our roadies and move on to the next venue, is this point about the use of music for branding, really, and how important it can be, and how rather short-sighted it is, says he, picking his words very carefully, to just pick a piece of music at random or pick a piece of music that belongs to somebody else.
I think it's a progression that people go through in business. I mean, I've done it myself. I've done it in terms of creating logos for my business. I've done it, or various businesses, where kind of some thought has gone into it, but not enough. It hasn't gone deep enough. And I wonder whether businesses, as they grow, recognise that and start to realise that they do need deep, deep personal personification, that everything they do must relate very closely to, well, we come back to that phrase again, their core brand values, their core DNA. I don't know, what do you think? Do companies regularly go that journey, or is it something that few understand?
I don't know enough about whether, I mean, certainly any big successful brands are absolutely coherent. You don't come across, you know, Apple or Microsoft or any of the top 100 brands in the world doing anything that wasn't coherent.
Hmm.
And they spend an enormous amount of money ensuring that they remain coherent. And that means that they exercise quite considerable authority within the organization over what can be used and what can't be used. And they do it for a very, very good reason. It's not a power kick by the marketing department or anybody else for that matter. People love coherence, right? They even like things that they don't like to be coherent. At least then they know what they don't like rather than get confused by stuff. Humans like clarity. So one of the key things that people want to happen, and they will never express this in this way, but they actually want the brand to be almost unnoticed. They want nothing to stick out as a sore thumb. They want the whole thing to work together as if it was a family of elements tied together, so that even if they disagree with the message, even if they don't like the message, they can at least understand it and they can at least admire what they don't like.
Yeah. Because they're able to make a decision based on the correct information, the correct input. So therefore, their value judgment is based on, I mean, of course, because, and here's the thing, it's that whole issue of you can't please everybody all of the time. So therefore, if you're very explicit in the kind of people you're trying to attract, then you'll attract them. But if you send out a mixed message and you're trying to attract everybody, well, that's just going to end up as a big incoherent mess, surely.
You know, every bit of incoherence fuels the suspicion that people have that they're being tricked, you see, because they actually don't know whether it's an accidental weakness on the behalf of the business that it's incoherent, or whether it's deliberately trying to put forward one set of clothes on a Monday, or one set of clothes to one kind of person, another set of clothes to another.
I wonder if a business has ever achieved that successfully and intentionally. I can't think of one, but...
So it becomes successful through incoherence.
Yes. Well, but incoherence is their brand.
Well, you see, that would be a quite considerable creative point, and you'd kind of wonder about what message incoherence might be giving off. It could be amusing. I mean, that would be no difficulty. It could be anarchic, and I'm sure there's a way of thinking this out in such a way that, you know, you could say it would be terribly bad if we repeated the same message on a Monday as a Tuesday, you know. So, but that, of course, gets into a situation, for instance, where on Monday you're selling washing machines and on Tuesday you're selling financial services. Design me a company that would succeed by having complete incoherence in its product range and its service range, right? And then you try to say, well, so therefore it can't be consistently incoherent, because that would mean that you would never even know if it would be there tomorrow. If you're going to drop into that company, it would have to have a location which would be coherent.
You're right, because that model, in a way, is what brands like Lidl and Aldi do, where they have, for a certain week or certain days of a week, they will have certain products which may never come back into the shop again. Now, they have their products that are always there, but then they print a catalogue every week, and it will tell you on which day, from which day to which day, which products will be available.
Yeah, but Lidl and Aldi don't sell you products, you see. What they do is they sell you a promise that you can't feed your family for less anywhere else. That's what you're buying from them. You're buying this belief that, you know, there's no point in going anywhere else. This is the cheapest. And if what I need is the cheapest, I don't need to look anywhere else. That's what they're selling. A promise. Each of the products carries a promise within it, and that's what branding is about. It's branding is about the promise that the customers imagine you're making to them. Mm. And of course, you want them to imagine in their head the promise that you actually want to make to them. Of course, if they have in their head that you've promised them the cheapest things, and they go down the road and they find in Marks and Spencer's that they can get the same thing at a cheaper price, I mean, they feel really, really done by.
Well, which is inevitably going to happen, because this is what being the cheapest is all about. There's always... I heard this lovely saying, the problem with a race to the bottom is you may actually win it.
Okay, we're crossing a bridge, Roger. We've crossed a bridge now. We're leaving the island in the centre of Cork. And we're coming onto
the old
Dockland
area.
There's, you know, if you go south from here, you hit the sea. An ending, Roger. Lead us out now.
Lead us out.
We've got to hand over to other musicians after this show finishes.
Well, let's do the traditional outro. Paul, where can people find out about you and your new business?
Well, they can Google Change Agents Branding and they'll find our company. And we use the catchphrase more meaningful marketing. So hopefully in days to come, you put that phrase in and you might find us too.
And we're just walking past a poor dead bird.
And thanks for associating my business with a dead bird. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, you know.
Well, it's going to stick in people's minds. And I'll associate my own business with a dead bird as well. If you want to see my new business, you can go to storyfoundry.eu. We do have a slogan. And
it's called a brand positioning statement. A slogan, right.
Brand positioning statement. And of course, in this draft, I can't remember what it was. I am so tired, my brain has stopped working. Anyway, meaningful and memorable are two of the words in it. We help people tell meaningful and memorable stories. There is another word in there. Anyway, I'm signing off with egg all over my face. Paul, you say the final goodbye.
Before you do, in all seriousness, I have to greatly thank Jane Boyd, who came in and did such a wonderful job on the Business Jazz podcast while I was away, and I just want to say a very special word of thanks to Jane.
How could we possibly sign off without mentioning Jane? Well, there you are. I can only echo what Paul has said. Jane, you're a wonderful lady. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care of yourselves.